I heard you love Madam Web more than anybody ever loved anything.
Well, even if that was true, that still wouldn't be like a very big amount of love. That's still a very tiny, tiny bit.
Well, you didn't see it, which is saying something. Yeah. But is that movie as shitty from what you've heard it's been made out to be?
It has to be like among like the many reels of trashing it. Like I saw like one where they compilated a whole bunch of people talking about how like garbage it is, and then it cut to like this guy who was in like a full-on Spider-Man like suit and had a whole bunch of like had like a big Spider-Man movie while you know Spider-Man like room and stuff like that. And he's like, well, I don't care, I'm still gonna go see it. And he goes and he sees it, and then it cuts to him sitting in his car just like, there was no story, there was no like, there was just, it's terrible,
there was no Spider-Man.
And I keep on seeing clips of like poorly, like even like in the trailer, like there's, it's shittily edited where, because like she's like an first responder, like, you know, person. And like, so there's like a traffic accident and she goes to like the driver's side car to talk to the person, and then it cuts to her like sitting in the passenger seat, or like not the seat, but the passenger side, because the car is like turned upside down, yeah, doing something. It's like, well, that was shittily edited and shot. And then they show like, it was like a scene from like the big fight at the end where like she drives an ambulance like through like a wall, which it wouldn't just collapse into accordion, but it went through this wall to get like this bad spider person. And like he's sitting on the car and like he jumps into the ambulance and gets smashed. And then so all the jokes were just like, the movie's so bad that the bad guy just wanted to get killed so he could be out of it. And
he just killed himself via ambulance. So there's no spider powers in this movie.
Well, I think there's some, because there's like multiple spider women. But then
it's in dream sequences.
Oh, okay. Then saying pretty much like what you see is what you see in the trailers. Like all what you see of the trailers.
But that's all the dream sequences.
Yeah.
None of that happens in the movie. Mm. I mean, it does as a dream, but it's not real. So there is no, from my understanding, no spider powers. No, nothing. Just stupid shit.
They even did there's a scene in it was either the first or second Spider-Man movie where it's like, you get like this point of view of like Spider-Man like going up a wall. They use that footage.
Yeah, they just rehashed the old footage.
So hopefully two things might just come out of this. It just causes like everything to like, because you know, like you had like the Venoms and the Morbiuses, which weren't that great, but like, you know, fans enjoyed them at least. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Enjoyed them as like a crappy movie. Well, I mean, hopefully this would just make people then just be like, fuck all Sony, you know, Spider-Man movies, to where it either goes, fine, just go back to like Disney and, you know, and just have them do it, or they at least go and do what people have been wanting to do since the last Marvel Spider-Man movie and give Andrew Garfield his third Amazing Spider-Man movie. Instead with like, because you could have all this shit that's happened and just be like in his universe, you know what I mean? Anyways, to kind of help savage it, you know, a little bit.
But it'll just be Morbin time all over again. They'll have the movie come out, but then it'll just be like he loses his spider powers.
Right, yeah.
It's just Peter Parker taking pictures of people.
Creepily taking pictures.
Just a gym creep. Yeah, I'm not going to see that movie. I'm not going to see any Marvel or superhero movies ever again.
Ever again.
Except for Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
I don't have no interest anymore. They all fucking suck. I'm just going to say, Last Guardians was good. But other than that, garbage. What's the last Marvel movie you actually liked? Or just superhero movie in general?
Guardians. You just said that's probably out of the newest ones, probably. The Spider-Man movies, I was, you know, but I'm also a Spider-Man guy, but I did love those movies. Yeah, like the Ant-Man wasn't that great. I mean, it was okay. I didn't hate it as much as some other people did, but yeah, they did the cast for Fantastic Four, so that's gonna, you know, so that's coming. So hopefully that.
I hate the cast.
It is a weird cast.
It's not great.
No, I see the Pedro Pascal. I think they should have just had him replace Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. I feel like he's more Iron Man than Reed Richards, because like Reed Richards is like, they're very 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 intelligent, you know, characters. I just like the personality of Tony Stark. I feel like Pedro Pascal could do, you know, better than like a normal Reed Richards. And then the X-Men movies are
poop. They're poop. They're gonna be poop. They're always gonna be poop.
They might be. They might
poop.
Be okay.
Poop.
I feel bad for whoever's gonna be Wolverine next, though.
Shit. Or Professor X or Beast or just any of them. Poop. It's gonna be poop.
What about
It's gonna be like the animated where they take all the boobs and butts away. I don't want it, and I don't even fucking think I'm ever gonna watch it.
Now, are you gonna give like the James Gunn DC stuff when it starts coming out? Are you gonna give it any?
No, I'll watch another Robert Pattinson Batman, and I don't even want to watch the Joker 2. It's a musical now. It might not be a musical, you know.
Yeah,
just somewhat musical, but
I'm not a fan of
the Gaga.
Yeah, and I've seen things and I've heard about how she's a really good actress, and it's just, but like, I'm just not a fan.
Well, that brings its own weird crowd to the thing.
Yeah.
Regardless, I'm probably not gonna watch too many superhero movies ever again.
I'll get you to watch a couple.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe if a good Lobo movie comes out.
Yeah.
Or if they just do unique movies again and stop making the same fucking movie over and over.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Hopefully Deadpool 3 makes $17 billion, and they'll go, okay, let's make a bunch of rated R movies.
Yes, yes.
And then we won't have to get stuck in fucking kiddie land anymore, where it's like, we can only make movies that appeal to children in China, which means they're heavily censored and not funny. Like, okay. So today's episode is sponsored by
Disney.
This is where I insert just like the Chinese Communist Party propaganda. No. We have no sponsors, but we will be back after these messages. Not messages. What's the opposite of messages? Nothing.
Nothing.
Non-messages. Intro music. You are listening to the Drunken Pen Writing Podcast. Da, 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 da. I'm your host, Caleb James. With me today, Spencer, the Green Bay Goo Gobbler Church. I think it's just the whole month of semen related.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't...
Because last week you were some kind of spooge sponge.
Sponge, yeah.
So this week you could be the Goo Gobbler. I didn't say it was a man's fluid or even an animal fluid.
It could just be a whole bunch of cheese.
Yeah, you could just be gooey cheese, or, you know.
That still would be a lot.
Some kind of gelatinous goo material. Maybe you broke into one of them, liposuction clinics.
Maybe I just took an average Green Bay fan and started to melt them.
I don't think we have any Wisconsin listeners anyway.
They know it's true.
It is. You just stab Rob Reiner.
The only reason they can be out in those, like, minus 15 degree home games in December.
Just full of goo like Rob Reiner. He looks like he could be from Green Bay. today we are talking about publishing.
Yeah, sure we are.
But more specifically, I wanted to discuss this matter at hand. Now that I have been accepted and or published in multiple things in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, I started thinking about the view that most people have towards indie publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Not indie publishing as in, which was also a topic we could discuss, but not indie publishing as in I'm publishing my own books.
Mm-hmm.
Indie publishing is such as small presses run by one person or a group of people, and they're doing it themselves, and they're putting out anthologies, actual novels, all kinds of stuff. So the work isn't just their own work. Mm-hmm. It's work that is sourced from other people.
Yeah.
Some pay, some don't. Regardless.
Isn't like, yeah, like you were saying, we could, depending on where we go with this episode, there's multiple levels to that, which, yeah, like you said, that could be a whole nother episode.
So I've been published by indie publishers who are just one person running the small press and are in the midst of hiring, not really hiring, probably more like a volunteer thing, mm-hmm, which is funny because most reviews are made up of volunteers. These credible reviews, yeah, and journals are just like university students, usually almost like a university newspaper. Yeah. But it's like, that's credible, and you get in that, and you know, I'm in the New England Review, and it's one of the biggest publication credits I can have. But then if you get someone who assembles their own team, but they're publishing genre stuff, all of a sudden, it's somehow not as legitimate.
Right.
I don't agree with that. I never agreed with that, actually. there was a time, it's not so bad now, though the market is oversaturated, but there was a time where we not poo-pooed indie publishing, but we were like, you know, if we indie, like we publish our own work, people are not going to take it seriously, right? Mm-hmm. That was our thinking. And that has shifted since, because that was, what, 2016?
Right, yeah.
You know, in the, even just in the last 5 years, I feel like that's really shifted towards like, oh, people are making a shitload of money mm-hmm. off of this. And that's another part of this is, what do you do here? If you submit to, I don't know, the Fuckhead Review, you know, one of the biggest reviews in the country, and they give you, let's say generous, let's say they give you $300 for a short story.
Yeah.
All right, that's not too bad.
No. I take it.
You published in it. You get a good credit. They sell 10 fucking copies because nobody reads this literary garbage anyway. Whatever. Or you sign, you know, not necessarily a publishing deal, though they do have them, with one of these small presses, but you get like, you know, we'll use a better example. Instead of short story, let's say a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of the Fuckhead Review, you have the big Fuckhead publishing company. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the top publishing companies, Penguin or something, wants to publish your work. I don't even know what the fuck they give for a going rate anymore. Yeah. But let's say they give you
2 pennies.
Let's say $15,000-$20,000.
Yeah,
that's what they give you for your book, and then you pretty much give them all the rights for everything, Netflix, everything. So you netted $20,000 off of something that took you a year and a half, 2 years to write. Okay. Or you sign that same book over to an indie publisher and they don't pay you, if you're lucky, maybe $1,000.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to, honestly, they're probably just not going to pay you up front.
Mm.
But what they will do, you don't get an advance, but you'll get all the royalties and all the rights are yours. So if this book takes off, now you are making more than $20,000.
Yeah.
If you sell it to Netflix, you know, you're making a lot more money. So it's like you're banking on yourself, but versus the indie publishing where you're putting it out yourself, you actually have somebody backing you and doing the hard stuff with the printing and the editing and things like that.
Well, and what I lean to that more into is like, if you go to a bigger publisher, they might advertise it, they might not. You never know with that kind
of
stuff.
A lot of the times they want you to market it now.
Yeah. Which you would probably still have to do with the smaller publisher, but again,
they're backing you. They actually care.
You're getting more of the reward off of that work. And also, I think it's good, too, because if you can do it that way and you actually start getting like a following and fans and stuff, then you can know that's just more better for whenever you do go to like a bigger one, because you're like, look, I'm selling, that's just like an even nice, but I'm selling 50 copies off of this self-published, you know, thing. So not only do I have these people, but imagine that coming over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, you know what I mean? You can kind of use that as an extra bargaining chip to either get paid better or to be like, actually, I'll take less money, but I want at least some of my rights or a cut of every, like, you know what I mean? Everything going forward, you know, that kind
of
stuff.
Well, one of the big benefits of publishing through an indie press, they don't have 1 million books.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Penguin or Random House or whatever. I don't even know if they're the same fucking thing anymore or not. But you go through one of them. How many fucking authors are on their mm-hmm. like, how many books are they put? How many books are you competing with?
Have you ever thought about that? Like, anytime we've gone to like Barnes & Noble or any bookstore and you're looking at stuff and you're trying to find something, how many good books you probably just actually pass up?
Oh, yeah.
Without even realizing it or you know, knowing what's there. But
well, the big publishers tend to use, they just don't want to put any money in. So you often get the shittiest covers, the most generic covers. Mm-hmm. They slap it together super quick. And it's just like you said, we just pass them up.
Yeah.
It could be the content could be great, but we don't know because it doesn't appeal. They don't do any job marketing it.
You just don't know. Like, you don't know the author. You don't know.
But you can go to an indie press, and let's say you're like, hey, I have this graphic artist. I want to do my cover. Even if you're not willing to fork over the grand or whatever it's going to cost to get this person, usually it's like $400 or $500 max. But you could be like, can I hire one? And, you know, we credit them in the book and, you know, they'll usually go for that.
Well, and that's even like, you know, just what we've seen from at conventions. Like, we found multiple really well written books and comics and stuff like that, that are putting the stuff out themselves or have, you know, third party help, like we've been saying. And it's like you get a chance to talk to these people under the, you know, get a, you know, get the pitch and then like all that stuff. And you're like, oh, that does sound cool. Other than like if they, I was saying like if you just happen to come across it in like a bookstore or a comic book store, you know, whatever, yeah. And you're just like, well, I don't know, there's all these other comic books. Like, what's this thing? You know, it's you have less chance of giving it a chance.
The problem is with the general audience. There's the not just the stigma that comes with in indie press, which I don't think is warranted anymore, but you get the name brand shit. Mm-hmm. It's the same reason why people buy Fruit Loops instead of the 5-pound tub at the bottom of the shelf that's cheaper than the box of Fruit Loops. It's the same fucking thing. Probably the exact same cereal from the same. It's just packaged different. A different name. It's like Fruityos or something stupid. But anytime you have a name brand and a non-name brand, the general public just goes name brand because they, you know, the advertising. Mm-hmm. That's why you get fucking a Nike swoosh on your sweatpants and suddenly those $8 pants go up to fucking $70. Right. It's like, come on. You throw the Rocks logo on fucking Under Armour pants and they go up 50%. It's like, why? I hate that you could go to like a comic shop, for instance, and you see Marvel, DC. Well, those are the big ones, but then you see like Boom Studios.
Yeah.
If you're not a comic fan and you see Boom Studios, you're like, well, that looks like a knockoff. Like, right, what is that, garbage? Yeah,
you don't know.
Even Valiant. Like, Valiant's like, what, the third big one now.
Well, they've probably fallen off a little bit
for
now.
For a while there, they were competing. Yeah. I thought they were doing a really good job. We were seeing them everywhere. And they had really good books. But the general audience doesn't know Valiant.
No.
They just know Marvel and DC, so anything outside of it, even, you know...
You're lucky if you maybe get, like, Image or something.
Yeah, and Dark Horse, or anything, even if it's, like, owned by Marvel or DC, it's just, like, a subset of them. People are just like, oh, I don't know it, so it must be shit. That's the weirdest thing. Why does it have to be shit? Mm. So, like, we talk about, like, some of the people we've had on the podcast recently, like the Whiskey Tit people or the Saggy Meniscus press people. It's, like, smaller presses putting more effort into putting this book out to make it sell. And sure, it might not sell hundreds of thousands of copies, but let's say Tyler Gore's book sells, I don't know, just in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
If most of the money's going to him and the people that are buying that are actually really caring about it, that's a pretty big win versus going to Penguin and you don't even know the numbers. And most often, all the books they sent to Barnes & Noble don't get sold and they just have to eat the cost and, you know, take them back.
Right.
And then the
which author, I always wonder if that ever affects like the writers, like
it makes it so they don't want to publish their next works. Like a lot of writers I know.
Well, I mean, I just didn't even know if they would have to give back some of the money that they were.
You don't have to give back the advance. That's just for finishing the book. But yeah, I don't know if they. I don't know what else comes with those contracts that have been published by one of them. But like, if you're the writer and all your books come back, like just nobody bought them, even if you have a 3-book deal, let's say. The publisher has to honor the contract, so they have to publish those two other books. They will publish those books. They're under no obligation to put those out.
Yeah, that or they might just pay you out with not wanting to even having, you know.
That would be the ideal scenario.
Look, we might not give you your full contract, but we'll give you half, but then don't bother writing anymore for us.
Yeah, I think you'd be really lucky if they bought out your contract and you got to keep the rights to those works.
Well, yeah,
but that's probably not going to happen. What usually happens, because they're fucking greedy assholes, they just own your book, the licensing for it, and until that license runs out, you can't do anything with it.
I mean, well, that's what I think Paulie Cooley is just getting his rights back for like most of the Black novels, I think, and he's getting ready to like work on re-releasing them under his old thing, and then because he still had like 2 more books that he's finished writing them. I think he has them out on like podcast or whatever, but he wasn't putting them out in print until his deal ran out, you know, on the thing.
And he was, what was his publisher? It was a smaller publisher. I don't know if it was necessarily an indie publisher, but I can't remember the name of it. It was a cool name.
Yeah.
It's like a horror publisher or something, but I don't know, because that's another thing, though. You do have like what seems like the indie publishers, but then you find out they're just like a subsect of one of the bigger names, like how the movie industry, they always have like these different studios, but they're under the same brand. But like a lot of the publishers, they'll do what the movie industry does, where they'll make a movie and then just shit can it, not like, you know, tax write off for them. So they probably do the same thing with novels. It's like, oh, his first book didn't sell. We're done with the guy.
Yeah.
So we're just going to eat the cost of having paid him for this work, and he's just, and hopefully your contract, they don't have the license forever.
Yeah.
Like, be very stringent and get a good agent when you have, even if you're a first-time novelist, when you negotiate your contracts. I would always say, if you can, fucking Netflix or streaming rights and movie rights and TV rights, I mean, and honestly, international rights.
Not only like an agent, but like, spend a couple extra bucks and get a lawyer to look over it, you know, just to, you know, cover your ass a little bit.
Well, here's a question. So say you sign a 3-book deal and they want to give you, I don't know, let's say $100,000 for 3 books. I don't these figures, I have no idea.
We're just doing nice round numbers.
I just know, like, in the 90s, I remember $15,000 was a thing people got paid for.
Yeah.
For a book deal, it was their advance. Because I remember horror stories of people they don't finish the book and they have to pay it back.
Yeah.
And they're like, I already spent it. And they get their legs broken. They get arrested and shit. Let's say you get $100,000 for 3 books. That's a good chunk of change.
Yeah. I take it.
But here's the thing. Do you take it or do you negotiate your contract? Because with that $100,000, you give them rights to everything.
Well, yeah.
But do you negotiate and you go, hey, I want the movie rights to this, because you think it would make, you know, maybe it's a series and you think, oh, this is a surefire movie series. Mm. Like, this will be a Netflix series or something. This will be a hit. Or you go, I definitely know this will be popular internationally because my story's set in Japan or Russia. Right. So what do you do with that?
I mean, I would try to.
But then your 100,000 goes from 100,000 to.
Yeah, then so you're going to have to make me like, how about you give me like 70,000 plus some of the rights on the, you know, not maybe not full rights, but like, you know, you get a partial, like, you get your, you know, your 5 cents every time somebody watches it on Amazon or something like that.
That's another thing, like the royalties. I don't know how that really works. Like, do you negotiate the royalties or is it just a set percentage that the publishing industry generally gives you? Because I know indie presses, a lot of times they'll be like, hey, we'll give you 90% royalties. We'll give you 100%. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, you're not selling thousands and thousands of copies, probably, but even some of the best fucking.
But hey, if you have a big family and you get everybody to buy a book.
Yeah, I'm scamming them, but okay.
Hey, whatever.
So what is your personal view on indie presses?
I like them. I think they're really good for people just starting, or even people like us and even above us, where to, like, because like I've been just saying the whole episode, you know, those big. The big publishers are kind of like management at your work. They don't give a shit. They don't give a fuck about
art.
Yeah, or anything like that. To where with the indie / smaller publishers, there's more of a chance. I mean, I've said this before on the podcast when it comes talking about this kind of stuff, but it's been a while, that I always kind of, I'm more okay with like this kind of route because of growing up. You know, I was a big ICP fan growing up, and that's kind of basically what they did.
Indie.
And, you know, they started their own label. They even got picked up for a little bit on that Islands record label for a little bit until they got fucking let go. And, you know, and then just continued with their own, their own record label, to where they're putting out their own shit, how they want to get it. They got different artists on that label, like, you know what I mean? And then
it does take a lot more effort.
It does.
Like, just know if you do go the indie route, that work all falls on you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could ask Kevin Smith.
Like, right, it's like
doing the indie route. If it works, great.
Right.
But how many people have tried it or given their whole savings and everything to it and it's not worked?
Right, yeah. There is that. But, and then also, because like,
that's why I like the indie presses, because it's like a middle ground between publishing your own and a big publisher.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably want to go more indie publishing other than just my own, just because I know what I'd probably be comfortable doing, like, you know what I mean? I don't feel like,
plus you don't know how to fucking make your own covers or formatting,
any of that kind of stuff.
So you'd have to hire everybody, like people for every part of it. Jesus, that would suck.
So it would probably be more of just of a smaller / indie or press, to where like, hey, if there's anything I can help with that stuff, I'd be more than happy to help with. But it's be more focused in like on, you know, on them trying to, you know, put that, you know, that stuff together.
Another aspect of the indie publishing that I really respect is the fact that they still publish art.
Mm-hmm.
So like Whiskey Tit, they go for experimental. They go for the non-norm.
Well, that's like a lot of places that we've been submitting to for stories and stuff also have art submissions for like the different magazines and zines and all that kind of stuff.
But if you go through the big publishers, they don't want books anymore that are really challenging generally. They don't want you to take creative risk with your literature or your prose. What they want is formulaic writing that sells. Mm-hmm. They want James Patterson. That's all they care about is the money.
Yeah.
So they don't want you to write the next Ulysses. They want you to write the next fucking, I don't know, Tom Clancy book. And that's fine if you like to write that kind of stuff. But if you actually do want to tell a different kind of story that's unique, and if people read it, they'll go, oh, shit, that's a Spencer Church story.
Yeah.
If I've ever read one, then indie presses is your best bet until you can establish yourself mm-hmm. as, you know, a respected writer that the big publishers can't ignore.
Yeah, hopefully you would get to the point where we'll be like, well, I would like to work with you, Penguin, but if you don't feel like you can give me the stuff that I need and let me work in the way that I want to work, well, that's fine. I'll just continue on doing the thing that I'm doing.
I didn't.
Which also sucks because, like, that's the thing we've been talking about for a while now is that there's so few of, like, those big publishers right now. Is there's only, like, two or three of them now, right?
Yeah.
Of, like, the big, big publishers. So there's, like, not. So,
and they,
like,
just shut down because they were combining two more of them.
Yeah. They keep on merging into each other. So, I mean, and that's why I feel like maybe we're, like, the indie has kind of a leg up because, you know, it's the same thing we're having trouble with the movie studios. Everybody's buying everybody up, so there's, like, less places for you to like, pitch and to put your stuff, your work at.
Mm-hmm. I was looking up Chasing the Boogeyman. I was wondering if Richard Chismar did that under the Cemetery Dance publications, like his publishing. No, it's Simon & Schuster. So that's the big ones. That's another thing. It's like, we do talk about this, but then, like, your Stephen King's that he could make 100% profit. He'd make so much money if he just started publishing his own work. Nah, he just still goes through whatever shit publisher that he probably hates because it's easier. But with a name like Stephen King, he doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah, I'm sure he's well taken care of.
Like, he literally doesn't probably do anything other than I wrote the book and I don't even look at the edits anymore. They probably just edit it.
Yeah, they might show him, like, hey, this is what we're thinking for the cover, like, you know.
Yeah, he probably doesn't give a shit anymore. But that's when you become more of a brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're your own business versus, again, art. You're not really an artist anymore. You're just a face. So I don't, weird.
Which that should be, because I know that's something we talked about before, but it's been a while. And with, as we progressed of, like, we should probably do that in a couple episodes of talking about the artistry quotations of what we do, plus, like, well, I also want to do this so I don't have to fucking go to my shitty job anymore.
Well, that, again, that's where the formulaic writing comes into play, because, like, I'm experiencing this on the very minor scale with some of the stories. All the ones I submit that are more funky, 99% of them get rejected. Like, the ones I just take more experimental risk with. I have been having more success with the blending of the writing styles, where it's still like a normal story, but I tell it, like, the language I use is a bit different, or the way I use the language. But as far as, like, oh, you're just accepted because we like your story, that's usually when I write a story that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And I don't take too many risks. Because as we talked about off air, in some of the anthologies we've been reading, like from the indie anthology, even some of them that aren't indie anthologies, just regular anthologies, a lot of stories were just like, I can't believe this is what, like, we look up the reviews and the ones that are, you know, lavished with praise, we look at those stories and like, that? That's just like trope filled. Yeah. I mean, it's not written horribly, but it's like a regular, you wouldn't know the writer.
Yeah.
Like, if you had to pick them out of the lineup, you'd be like, I don't know who the fuck wrote this because it just reads like anything. And it's just a A to Z story with simple beats, and you can tell where it's going, but that's what people like.
Yeah.
And then again, we have to remember, what audience are we writing for? Are we writing for the majority general audience who just want, you know, interesting stories and don't care about, you know, if they know the ending's coming or if they can tell, like, you know, what the metaphors are or anything?
I mean, honestly, it'd probably be good to do a little bit of both.
That's what I try to do, is combine them. I try to do.
But I mean, even if you're like, this is one really weird story, and then is one more kind of like for the masses, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. And if I want a story to get accepted, I'll add like weird literary flair to it, but still make it so it's not overbearing or something that, because that's like literary fiction, a lot of times you have to slog through. Mm-hmm. And experimental fiction, sometimes you have to slog through because it's, you know, it's like puzzle solving.
Yeah.
That's how I've been looking at writing a lot now, is like high end puzzle solving. Because when I put, like, I've noticed a lot of my stories now, I've been writing, like, I still generally write A to Z, like my story beginning to end. I don't write a scene here, write a scene there, then combine them. But what I've been doing is I notice I'll catch myself. I'll have a paragraph and I'll just, it's not right. I like the paragraph, but it's not fitting. What's wrong? And then I'll, you know, I keep going and I'll write a couple more paragraphs. And then I end up combining and moving them and changing them around. And then I go, wow, that came out perfect.
It's like weird. It's like you don't know the order sometimes that it's supposed to be in until you have it on the page.
Yeah, you have to visually see it and read it out loud to tell, like, oh, no, this needs here, this needs here. This beat doesn't make sense at this spot. It needs to be one up or one down. And it's just really interesting to go into writing like that. But I feel like a lot of authors, they don't ever get to that stage. They're just, I'm going to tell a story. And you can always tell when you're reading something like that because it's paint by the numbers, you know? A lot of those kind of authors, and I'm not belittling anybody or their style of writing, but a lot of those authors are almost like, he walked to the door, he turned the handle, he opened the door, he walked through the door, he shut the door behind him. Fucking don't need any of that.
No.
That's too much. Like, that's definitely paint by the numbers. You're telling every single motion. Just have him go through the fucking door. But you get that a lot where it's like there's no beats because it's like literally step by step. You can't have big, okay, you know, he ripped open the door and then he ran through it. And then then you go right to the next action. If you get bogged down, if you're just, I'm rambling a little, but you get bogged down when you have to describe every single thing. But I've been coming across that a lot. And people, for some reason, the general audience, they don't hate it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that was one of my favorite stories. And I would read it and I'm like, fuck, what?
Yeah.
How? But I get offended by poor writing or just subpar writing. I don't like mediocre, even if it's like a James Patterson. So I haven't read James Patterson, so I can't judge him. But sure, I've read bigger name authors where I was like, this is fucking so mediocre. Why is anyone supporting this? You know, we've read how many comics where it's like big name comic. He phoned this fucking thing. Yeah. She phoned this in. They didn't give a fuck about this comic.
Right.
It's just a job and it shows. Like, I don't phone anything in. At least I can help it, but I'm also not getting paid a lot of money.
True.
And somebody was like, hey, Caleb, if you can write a short story in 3 days, we'll give you $2,000. I'm like, yeah. What's it about?
That's going to be very cookie cutter. I'm going to get that done nice and quick for you.
We need you to write a story about divorced vampires, and it needs to be done in 2 days. It has a word count that has to be minimum 6,000 words. And you better get working on it or you're not going to get paid. And I'm like, all right. And then the vampires were lesbians. They didn't say I had to be straight vampires. It was a lady, and they were doing lots of neck sucking. Mm. And then they were sucking other things. Mm. And there was so much blood coming from other places besides the neck, Spencer, because they're lesbians. And that brings up an interesting.
I'm thinking what you're thinking.
Brings up an interesting. Is that like free food?
Well, when you're in the vampire state.
Well, just vampires in general.
Yeah.
So if you just came, not a lady vampire, just a menstruating vampire. Menstruating lady. I don't know if vampires menstruate.
That's what I was getting at.
No, we're skipping that because that doesn't make sense. They can't be bleeding, right? I don't know, maybe, but that would suck because they don't age anymore. So if you're like a 22-year-old vampire or vampire lady, you just bleed for thousands of years. Like, that would suck every month for thousands. Can't do nothing about it. No. So if a vampire, Dracula, comes upon, what was her name? Nina?
Nancy? Something like that.
Wasn't Nancy. I'm going to say Nina. I believe it was Nina.
During a certain time of the month?
Certain time of the month. Is it just like freebies? Like, is it just like, oh, I don't have to bite? I don't have to work for this? Or is it gross to them? Because they drink a blood anyway.
Yeah.
Is it extra nutritious?
It'd probably be easier for them to find you. And just smell it in the air.
And that was the Drunken Pen Writing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed that episode. If you want to follow us,
we were good there for a good chunk of that episode.
It got real gross. If you, because I started, well, I didn't say it out loud, but I started thinking of like the brown clotting in my head. Do they get grossed out by that? I don't know. Is it like bat when meat goes bad? You're like, oh, I can't eat that now. So if you want to follow us for somewhat high end entertainment. I don't know. At DPW Podcasts on X, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. If you want to check out Spencer's OnlyFans this week, he is the, what were you? The goo?
Green Bay.
Goo Gobbler.
Something like, yeah, Goo Gobbler.
Green Bay. Green Bay Goo Gobbler. I just actually pictured the face you would make as your goblin goo. I was thinking like pudding. I don't have to be. So yeah, that's gross. And because I always forget about this, I am on another podcast called Arcade Bookshop. You should probably check that out because not only do we talk about video games and books, but we've been having guests on there and we still talk about video games and books, but we also are starting to talk about writing a little bit more. And my co-host, Bryce, has been, well, I think he's the main host, has been, yeah, he does all the fucking work.
If anything, you're the co-host.
I'm the co-host. He does all the work for it. You're the
Spencer of that podcast.
I am. I kind of like it.
It's nice, isn't it?
You don't have to fucking do all the editing. And that one's video, so you can see me look fat in the face and all that stuff and old.
Getting all red when you had too many beers.
Yeah, but Bryce had, well, it was actually, I think it was maybe my idea. I forget what name he came up with, but he's releasing episodes on Friday that are just like bite-sized episodes, like 10, 15 minutes. Kind of like
cafe.
Arcade cafe. Yeah, that's correct, because I helped him pick the name, I think. And those are just usually centered around updated news on the video game and book world, and also our writing progress, because as I had to tell Bryce 1,000 times, we're fucking writers first and foremost. Mm. Maybe talk about your writing, Bryce. Yeah. Because people probably want to hear about that. So he's finally doing that. And I'm sure we have thousands of downloads on those episodes. Maybe.
Yeah.
Not as much as DPW. I'm fucking. Can you guess what our last episode got? 3.9 billion.
Ooh.
Billion with a B.
Nice.
We'd be bigger than all of them combined. They'd be like, Joe Rogan, Joe who? Russell Brand, suck a dick.
I think they say that anyways.
I would. Nicholas Obergon. Maybe because he's British too. He really hates Russell Brand. I mean, I'm indifferent because I stopped. Well, I never followed him anyway. But when he got all conspiracy theory I just I was like, okay, check. Like Alex Jones. Like, I don't give
That's
a fuck.
Enough.
You're talking about gay frogs and stuff. You're done. So anyway, we thank you for listening. And we will check you out next week. Bryce, what are you doing?
Trying to, you know, game.
What?
This game is really hard.
Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Dude, you're supposed to be playing the game for next week's episode of Arcade Bookshop.
I mean... I will. I'm really close to beating this.
Right. And what about the book?
Huh?
We're supposed to finish a book for the podcast, too?
Oh, yeah. I finished that last week. Yes!
Oh, did you finally beat it?
Uh-huh. The first level.
Oh, boy.
You can listen to new episodes of Arcade Bookshop every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your pods. You'll always find us with a controller in one hand and a book in the other.
Hey Caleb, you wanted to see me?
Ah, Spencer, my good fellow. I've been expecting you.
Yeah, so did you want something or...
Want? Goodness no. Require.
Require?
Yes. I require your services for the briefest of moments.
Okay.
Surely you can see the predicament I'm in.
Well, actually, no, I can't. I lost my glasses at the pub last night.
A pub, you say?
Surely you can't be serious.
As serious as a fart during a rectal exam. And stop calling me Shirley.
Rightio. Anyway, if your spectacles were affixed upon your face, you'd see that I, the host of the most prodigious writing and books podcast in the business, has been immobilized by a rather substantial stack of fallen folios.
What?
My to-read pile finally fell on me while I was taking a nap.
But you're on a podcast table.
I hardly see how that matters.
And you're naked!
I hardly see how that matters.
Dude, your hairy ass is touching my drink coaster.
I hardly see how that matters.
It matters to me!
Can you just unbury me?
No way. Your reckless reading got you into this mess.
Blockhead! Wait! Don't go! There's a copy of War and Peace wedged in my taint! Spencer! Can you at least leave me a bottle of whiskey? Hello?
Can't get enough drunken nonsense? Listen to new episodes of the Drunken Pen Writing Podcast every Tuesday wherever you get your pods.